Happy Thursday, I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's overcast in West London, but guess what? It was snowing in Munich last night, and we saw one of the epic nights, I think, in Champions League history in a long, long time. We're going to get into that. Bayern and Paris Saint-Germain, we'll be talking a bit of Dortmund and City, Real Madrid, Liverpool, look, the stuff you expect to talk about in a Champions League week. And to help us break down the Bayern game, we have Derek Ray. Now, Derek, I was left at the end of that game thinking, man, what did I just see? Obviously, Bayern Munich losing their first home game in more than 2 years against the Paris Saint-Germain team riddled with injuries. Bayern also had people out. Two teams that absolutely went head-to-head, one against each other. We all talked about no Lewandowski. But then between the two of them, three defensive players substituted in the first 45 minutes. I'm not sure I've ever seen that. I'm sure I must have. This was just epic, right? From the neutral's perspective.
Yeah, epic and crazy and wild and, from a neutral point of view, brilliant. I mean, you couldn't take your eyes off it. And I think mistakes were part of that from both teams, but specifically from Bayern when you think about the goals that were conceded. Now, you would take nothing away from Mbappe, who I thought was immense. I mean, that was a star showing by a terrific player on an individual basis. But Bayern really contributed to their own demise. When you think about where the players were, you know, that first goal and the second goal and Manuel Neuer doing something that Manuel Neuer rarely does. But as you said, Gab, it was snowing and there were maybe extenuating circumstances. I think from the Bayern point of view, they'll look at this as a missed opportunity because they created a raft of chances. And in the Bundesliga this season, it's been worked out that they score a goal for pretty much every 5.5 attempts. So really, they should have probably scored 5 or 6 based on all of that in this game. But of course, they didn't have Robert Lewandowski, and that was to their detriment. And it just for once didn't happen in front of goal enough for Bayern for them to win the first leg.
Sure, he sounds a little bit like our buddy Jan-Arge Fjortoft, who put that tweet out where it said, if Lewandowski had been there, they would have scored 5 goals, which I think you might take some exception to.
I don't like it, and as much as we love Jan-Arge Fjortoft, and Derek was not making the same point, I think. Yeah, of course, but you know, with ifs and buts and all of that.
If my aunt had wheels, she'd be a bicycle.
Exactly. And if Derek had hair, he would be the Queen of England. But I thought Bayern were really good.
Scottish.
Yeah, Queen of Scotland. King of Scotland. Bayern played great. And you cannot hide from the fact that they were very, very dominant, that their press was so good, so effective, so just ruthless all the time. They just never stopped. They're such a machine. And I think they deserve a lot of credit because, yeah, they faced a Navas who was on fire once again, who's been so good this season. Their high line, as we expected, struggled against Mbappe and that pace, and that's why he played centrally, and Neymar was on a good day too. So PSG deserves some credit for the way they approached the game and how efficient they were. But on another day, Bayern could have won that game 5-2, 6-2 even. So I thought it was brilliant. And like Derek tweeted after the game, he tweeted the quotes from Hansi Flick on Sky Germany after the game saying, I'm happy at the way we played. I cannot not be happy. Okay, we lost the game. But if we play like this in the second leg, we will have a big chance to go through, which I think is fair.
This is the thing that gets me because Bayern, I mean, we saw them obviously against Leipzig. And that was kind of emergency Bayern, maximum result, minimum effort type Bayern. I thought a draw would have been a fair result in that game. For stretches, they were outplayed. I'm just struck by how they kind of flip the switch and come out with a completely different mindset and mentality in this game, Derek.
Yeah, and that struck me too, that against Leipzig, it was winning ugly and doing what you had to do and getting the result. This time, again, a different sort of team in Paris Saint-Germain. And I do think in a funny kind of way that the weather was part of the story. I think that, you know, snow in April, okay, you can have snow in April in Munich, but not that often and not like that. And I think that contributed to the mistakes. And I think once you get behind in a big game like that, as Bayern did in the third minute, and then you fall further behind, you know, you are chasing. You're in this sort of different mindset. You can't always be calm about how you go about your business. And, you know, as Julien said, it was a terrific spectacle, and it was a good performance. And I think Flick is right in that. I think he's right to say that with that brand of football, you're entitled to be happy. You're not entitled to be happy about the lack of defensive resilience. But, you know, we made the point already that, you know, in a game, you are losing these key players. You know, you are losing Goretzka, you are losing Süle. You're watching these players go off. And, you know, Flick said after the game, he said the squad is now getting ever thinner. You know, he's got to acknowledge that. You know, heavens knows who'll be available come the second leg.
Mark
but
Roker.
If you have that, well, yeah, and that's a problem for Bayern. I mean, we know that the squad was already a little bit thin in terms of players to come in and actually be effective backups. And so, you know, we'll find out to what extent that'll be necessary in Paris.
Jules, one thing that I think nobody can ever level against Kylian Mbappe, who scored two goals, is that, you know, we always use superstars. Oh, but does he do it in big games? I don't know if he can do it in a cold, windy night in Stoke, but he can certainly do it in big games. After performance against Barcelona, after this, I think he might have scored a goal in the World Cup final as well. So
yeah,
he kind of does it in big games, yeah?
I heard people saying that he didn't, though. On some channels, some coverage in some countries last night. He doesn't always do in big games, but when he does, that's six goals in his last three Champions League matches, the two Barca game and this one. And like Derek said, it's not always good when he plays up front on his own, but when he's in that kind of form and that kind of PSG performance, he's amazing.
This was one of those games which, because of all the injuries, obviously early injuries, the people who are already missing, from Florenzi and Verratti to Lewandowski to whatnot. Serge Gnabry, it's pretty important too. To the fact that we had those three first half substitutions. Everything felt kind of almost gladiatorial out there, especially in the Paris Saint-Germain end. Perhaps none more so than one of the guys who did have to come off, Marquinhos.
What an incredible night for him. I mean, he's the captain since Thiago Silva left, but he's more than the captain. He's, I think for me, he's already top 10, in the top 10 best centre-backs in the world. And he's very much the leader.
Already, I think he has been for many years.
Yeah, true. But he got injured after 5 minutes. So 5 minute groin injury, I'm not sure how much he could really move and run. But in the 30 minutes he played, he had seven clearances, and often behind Dagba to cover Dagba against Coman. I think he had something like five tackles. I mean, something incredible, considering he was already injured. And then he's about to come off. PSG have that free kick after 28 minutes. He said to Pochettino, let me go up for the free kick, and then I'll come off after. The free kick happens. The ball comes back on Neymar, which is a hell of an assist from him on his left foot first time. And then the ball drops for Marquinhos. Two things. One, he controls it with his left foot. I don't know how many centre-backs can control the ball on their wrong foot the way he did in the box.
Dude is Brazilian, but yeah.
But still, and considering from how far in the air the ball comes down, and in the snow, a white ball as well, I think that ball could have easily been orange and no one would have said anything. And then he finishes in front of Neuer. And I'm just like, on one leg. And I'm like, okay, if he was not already a PSG legend, certainly that goal, even if they don't qualify next week, that goal, like you said, forever people will remember the Marquinhos goal under the snow, injured for the last 25 minutes after that first touch against Manuel Neuer at Bayern.
Derek, it strikes me that when we talk about that, I mean, that goal was propitiated by, I think, at the same time, as phenomenal as Marquinhos is and as big-hearted as he is, and he's a former Roma legend as well.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, this was also because the Bayern defense got their timing completely wrong in coming out. Now, that is not unusual. We've seen Bayern's back line, maybe also because they've had so many changes this season, get a lot of things wrong like this.
On the first goal as well. They're all over the place on the first goal after 3 minutes. There's no shape.
That, to me, is a concern. On the first goal, there's no shape. And then on the first goal, I mean, you said before, Neuer doesn't make many mistakes. When Neuer does make mistakes, he generally makes howlers. He makes very, very few of them. But when he does, they're often serious ones. Also because he's often under a tremendous amount of pressure because the high line has created issues for him. And we could just look at this and say, yeah, nine, these don't count because they're individual mistakes. But Bayern play a system that is more predicated upon the individual never making a mistake than other teams, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair comment. I think they obviously have an idea what they want to do defensively, which was down to the high line for a long time. It's not been quite as much that in recent weeks because they were really getting burned having this high line and having teams figure out how to play against the high line with a chip ball over the top. And, you know, countless goals were scored like that. But I've had the impression they've tightened up a lot in recent weeks. But this was sort of back to a few months ago. And, you know, again, when you're playing against people like Mbappe and people like Neymar, then it's a different sort of challenge. I think it is a valid point to make about having to chop and change, to constantly having to switch things around, and, you know, being without people who are there most of the time. And even somebody like Goretzka, you know, who's not a defender, but he's an up and down box to box player, and he's somebody who can contribute. And I thought later in the game that became a factor as well. But I think it is a recurring theme, unfortunately, with Bayern. It's the worst defensive season in the Bundesliga in three decades, you know? Yet for all that, they've been scoring goals for fun. And as we discussed earlier, that's been their secret. It's just outscoring the opposition. Didn't happen this time.
There was a stat that one of those analytics types put out, which was over the past two seasons. I forget which one, otherwise I'd credit you. I know you're all big fans of the show. That in the in the two previous seasons, that there's a statistic which is basically shots on goal conceded from what they call rapid progressions or something, which is basically, it's essentially when the ball goes back to front in less than X number of seconds and covers this much ground, which is basically what Derek was talking about. Bayern had the second fewest in the Bundesliga for two consecutive seasons. I don't know, but I imagine one of those dire, deep-depending teams like Wolfsburg was probably first. This season, they're second bottom in the Bundesliga. Mm. So it's a style of play that is high risk, high reward. Mm. If you have everybody synchronized on top of their game, it works. If you don't, you can end up conceding.
And if you look at, if you remember, Derek, as well, the Mönchengladbach game where Bayern lost 3-2, it was very, very similar of Kimmich losing the ball in midfield, for example, and that quick ball for Lars Stindl, I think, on the first goal, for example, very similar to what happened yesterday against PSG. And I think it doesn't always do, because you don't always have a Neymar like we saw yesterday, or Mbappe, or even a Stindl or player in that Gladbach game. But that's where they're vulnerable. And in the final in August, PSG could not really capitalize on it. But they did on Wednesday night.
Now, Derek, I watched this on Sky Italia, the post game, and one of the things that they did was we have all this tech now, we TV companies, right? So they slowed it down. I don't know if this is real, but they worked out that Kylian Mbappe took 11 touches, 11 steps 11 in steps. The box. In 1.82 seconds.
On his second goal, on the third goal.
On PSG's third goal. I don't know what the frame of reference is. I don't know what the total amount is. But when you see it, you just see the guy's feet move so quickly and so much coordination. Yeah. How do you defend that?
I honestly don't know. It's funny. I watched that and I just immediately said to myself, that is world class. That is world class attacking, the like of which you do not see every day of the week. And you can criticize Bayern's defenders for that because they don't look great. But I mean, you know, he didn't make them look great. I think that's where you have to sort of tip your hat to the attacker. That's a goal I will not tire of watching. You know, I don't know about you guys. I just thought that is Mbappe at his best, summed up, personified.
And his four passes from the time Mitchell Bakker, and we're talking about Mitchell Bakker, getting the ball, and then again we talk about beating the press. Bayern were really tiring. You could see by then in the second half. Then that goes to Draxler, then to Di Maria, then to Mbappe, and it goes so quick that if you're not ready for this kind of attacking transition, or as Bayern, as we said, being very vulnerable on defensive transition, where you struggle a bit and it goes too quick for you. This is what happens. And I think when you saw Kylian Mbappe play on Saturday against Lille, who were really, really deep, who had two players on him every time, because it's a very different kind of game than the one that Bayern played on Wednesday, there he struggles. He struggled with France against Ukraine because it was exactly the same scenario. But if you give him all that space, and there's a couple of times in the second half especially, where if Neymar gives the ball half a second earlier, or if Draxler gives the ball, or even Galagay late in the game gives the ball in the better tempo, he goes one-on-one with Neuer, and PSG can score another three easily. So if you give him all that space, it could be lethal.
That's the thing, because we talked about how Bayern could have scored a lot more.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain could have scored a lot more.
Definitely.
There was obviously the Neymar run, which obviously stands out for me as well.
Yeah.
I want to show some love to... I mean, there was a number of unsung heroes. People have been criticized, who've come up big. You mentioned Draxler there. But in the interest of equity, let's mention a guy who is a hero for both teams. Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting. Because obviously he scored that decisive goal a year ago to get them into the final for Paris Saint-Germain. And look, Derek, when he played for Leipzig, we were all wondering, what do you do without, played against Leipzig rather, what do you do without Lewandowski? Do you play, you know, not Gnabry, different combinations? And he opted to play Choupo-Moting so it was almost like he was a placeholder, so that everybody else could do the jobs that they normally do, right? Sané and Coleman and Müller. He does it again in this game. And apart from the goal, I thought he gave everything that he had to give. And at some point, you're not a technical freak like Lewandowski, so there's certain things you won't be able to do. But he held up his end of the bargain big time.
Best Bayern player on the pitch, I thought, Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting. I thought he, his body language was terrific. His willingness to work was there for all to see. Of course, he's not Lewandowski. He's a different sort of player in terms of how many goals he's going to score. But, I mean, every player falls in that category compared to Lewandowski. And, against Leipzig, he came in, and it was a smart move by Hansi Flick not to change the moving parts around, but to have more of a fixed centre forward type. And the one thing about Choupo-Moting is, if you listen to the Bayern players and also the top brass, they all talk about how well liked he is in the dressing room. Now, you know, you and Jules and you know, the production staff might be well liked in the dressing room too. So it's
We're
not
very
just
well
about
liked.
That.
Very, very.
Yeah,
well.
Of course, I would expect so if they listen to this podcast. But he is somebody who is a good team man, and there's a lot to be said for that. And that's why there's talk, even at his late stage career wise, of maybe having him again next season, because he doesn't score goals on a prolific basis, but he does so many other things. And I'm with you. I thought Choupo-Moting, maybe together with Kimmich, best Bayern players on show.
He scored 11, by the way, in 11 seasons as a professional, he scored fewer top flight goals than Lewandowski scored in the last 15 months.
So just for context.
Yeah, watching the game with my children, one of my boys goes like, what's going on?
I want to be Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting when I grow up. I'm like, no you want to be Mbappe?
Let me talk. And he says, what's going on? Is this the Brazilian Ronaldo? Because at times he looked like almost unplayable. And I was like, oh my God, if Choupo is in that kind of form, you know, what chance do we have? And yet he scored a great goal, but he also missed a few, like the rest of the team, as we've been saying. And Navas was great. But I'm happy for him, because he was a really good guy, and I think he wanted to stay in Paris. He could have stayed. I think Tuchel would have liked him to stay. He wanted a two-year deal. Leonardo only offered one, or was ready to offer one, and that's why he left. But same as in Bayern, he was loved in Paris, despite being burgled twice. But apart from that, that was the only negative about his time in the capital.
Oh, well, it's funny. Also, just the fact that you mentioned he was well-liked. There's an important distinction, as anybody. This is where I gratuitously insert a theater reference into this. The difference between well-liked and being liked is critical, as any fan of Willy Loman from A Death of a Salesman knows. Yeah, that's gratuitous. Pick up the reference. Harass me about it on Twitter. But it was fresh in my mind. I want to talk about Neymar, because, you know, Derek, Neymar obviously got sent off idiotically at the weekend, two very stupid yellow cards. There were some people who, Neymar always gets questions. He's lived with this anvil over his head. And sometimes, many times, actually does stupid things. Other times, he guts it out, takes a lot of punishment, and makes a difference. I thought a tremendous game. There were some people who went so far as to say, look, he got himself sent off on purpose against Lille so that he could miss the Strasbourg game.
No.
No, but that was one of the storylines, right?
Yeah, but no.
Derek, what's your take on Neymar in the sense that when you see him appear, is he less than the sum of his parts? Or is he just somebody who can like switch on at sometimes and terrify you?
He certainly would terrify me because I think he's capable of doing things that most, you know, humans can't do with the ball. I remember watching him a few years ago at Celtic Park in the Champions League with Barcelona. And I remember just, you know, the Celtic fans that night would boo his every touch because he, you know, they thought he was a cheat. You know, they thought he was a diver. But I remember talking to a few fans afterwards and they said, yeah, you know, we've got to give him the stick because, you know, that's where we are with this now. But I mean, goodness me, this guy is the sort of player we just never see here at Celtic Park. Now, that was a few years ago. You think about his evolution since, you think about his missteps as well. But I mean, I loved watching him last night. I mean, I took just a few minutes just to watch his movement, to watch his passing. And you know, if Mbappe was the assassin in front of goal last night, Neymar was the man who provided him with the ammunition. And it was a lethal combination.
He was so good, and he had to give a response. He had to prove a point after what happened on Saturday, and we know that he was short of match fitness because he'd been injured. But the tempo of the pass on the first goal, just at the right time, just inch perfect. The ball for Marquinhos on the second goal, as we said, under the snow on his left foot, first time, is just incredible. And you know, to relieve the pressure as well, because we talk again about the press from Bayern. But if you've got, and you had no Verratti, who is maybe your best player to try to beat the press or certainly not fall under too much pressure, but then you've got him who can do a sombrero in his own half and then still keep the ball under that kind of pressure from a Kimmich or Goretzka or an Alaba or whoever played in midfield in that game. It's such a bonus to have him in that kind of form. The problem is he hasn't always been in that kind of form. And again, that's the problem. In the Champions League, he's missed some big game, he's played in others. And if he plays like this at this kind of level, you know how far you can go.
All right, which leads us nicely to end this with something that I saw on TV last night, which was post-game, Leonardo getting interviewed in the snow. For those who don't know, those post-match interviews, they're normally, there's a protocol and it's normally very strictly about the game and whatever. It happened, though, that the guy interviewing him was transfer market god Gianluca Di Marzio, who can't resist asking transfer contract type questions. And Leo was in such a good mood.
Yeah.
And he asked them, like, so what's up with Mbappe and Neymar's contracts? And Leo was so happy. I tweeted this out. I wasn't expecting that it would get such a response, although then you retweeted it, yeah. So like it went into the PSG Twitterverse. When he said, oh, I think there'll be good news on their contract soon. Jules, what is the situation here? What does he mean by it? Was this a throwaway comment? Good news for who? Good news for Real Madrid fans? Right, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, the way I saw it, again, I'm completely biased because I want them both to extend the contract. But with Neymar, we know that he's very much agreed, and it's just a question of timing and when you announce it.
And is this also because, sorry, Neymar's case, realistically, there's nowhere else for him to go? Like,
not on that money, that's for
sure. He makes an enormous amount of money. He's not just motivated by money. I believe few players are, but equally, you know, there's talk of him going back to Barcelona, but the reality is they can't afford him in any way, shape, or form. He's not going to go to Real Madrid. Probably doesn't see the appeal in the Premier League. United maybe could afford him if they really wanted him, but they ain't going to go there.
And he's 29.
And he's 29.
29.
So,
time is running out. Yeah, I think so. And also, I think he's happy now in Paris. As we've explained before on the show, it was quite tough at the beginning for just him to adapt and the change between Barcelona and Paris and all of that. I think he's happy now. For Mbappe, it's a different
kettle of fish.
Yeah, one, because he's much younger, of course, 22 years of age, because I think he has so much ambition at this time of his career that he wants to go to a bigger club and winning big things and all of that, whether that's Real Madrid or Liverpool or Bayern Munich, I mean, wherever he wants to go, he will be able to. So there's far more at stake, I think, on this one. And Kylian isn't sure to stay, and if he stays, it's not just for one season. He wants to stay for quite a big chunk and then go somewhere else. Or do you go now? But again, who can offer you financially the kind of wages that you want and that PSG are ready to give you? So there's so much to take in when you talk about Kylian Mbappé's contract negotiation and extension. That when I saw the quote that you tweeted, Gab, about we will all be happy, I'm like, okay, maybe they have found an agreement with Mbappé and his family for him to stay, I don't know for how long, but certainly to extend that contract so he doesn't have just 1 year left this summer.
All right, if I were advising Mbappé, and I'd love to get you both your views on this, and I wrote a piece about this, it's up on the website too, about the power of the release clause. If I was advising Mbappé, and I would say, hey, look, here's how I insulate myself. My contract's winding down. I say, okay, yeah, look, I'll stay. I'll sign a 5-year deal. I don't need a big raise, give you a hometown discount, whatever. But let's put a reasonable release clause in here. Maybe even the release clause the difficulty here is that obviously they spent a ton of money to get him.
Yeah.
But if you do a 5-year deal and the release clause at like 130, 140, 150, you are somewhat insulated. Paris Saint-Germain know that they have to keep you happy every year. And you benefit and you give yourself more options.
Yeah, so release clauses are not allowed in France. However, you could have something quite similar that you make kind of a legal,
private agreement.
Yeah, something like that. And I think you're right. And I think PSG would be very happy to do that. And maybe that's the way of an agreement. Okay, you extend and then we put that price. And whenever someone comes with that price, whether it's next season, 2022 or 2023, or whenever, then we let you go.
Derek, since we have you on this subject of release clauses and turning it over to Haaland, I was surprised. Like I saw my old buddy Didi Hamann, who I watch a 2000. I'm so old that I watch a 2007 Champions League final in Athens next to Didi Hamann, who did not have a seat. He had to go and sit on the steps in the press box.
When you went 25.
What?
When you were 25 in 2007.
Yes, when I was 25 years old in 2007.
I remember.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. Derek was only 28.
Yeah, he was. He had hair.
Something like that, yeah.
But
I wasn't 28, but that's all right.
I like Didi a lot, but he came out and he said it's disgraceful, it's disrespectful, the Rayo La Road show. I think it suits Dortmund because this release clause means that, fact of the matter is, if they wait a year, they're going to get a lot less money for him. So if they can get drum up interest now, which I think is improbable, makes no sense for him to leave, then it's in Dortmund's interest. But what's your take? And is Hamann kind of isolated in moaning about this? Because Dortmund actually seemed pretty relaxed about it.
Yeah, I think Didi is a fairly sort of lonely voice on this one. I mean, the whole subject of release clauses, as Jules said, in France, they're not formally allowed. In Germany, they're very much part of life. I mean, that is the way it is with a big-name player. And actually, with coaches now as well, that's becoming a topic for discussion in Germany. What is the release clause for a coach? Adi Hütter, for example, at Frankfurt, that has been widely debated that there's a release clause for him.
But Marco Rose. Haaland,
yeah. Marco Rose, yeah, that was triggered by Dortmund. So, with somebody like Erling Haaland, Dortmund aren't complaining about that. It does give them an option. If, as looks likely, they don't make it into the Champions League, they can try to sell Erling Haaland if they see fit. They're saying that they're planning with him, but of course they're going to say that. And I don't actually have a huge problem with the notion of a release clause. I think that football does certain things its own way, as we know. We like some of them, we dislike others. I think here it's let's face it, it's part of the scenery for a team like Borussia Dortmund. And we'll see. I think we have to watch the next few weeks to see exactly what happens, but I don't think they'll be in the Champions League next season. I think it's a bridge that's too difficult to make your way over. And so time will tell.
Just to finish on Bayern and PSG, and before we let you go, Derek, I just want to remind everyone, as we said, Bayern hadn't lost since 2019 at home in the Champions League. The team that beat them in 2019 was Liverpool, that went on to win the title, the Champions League. When they lost at home in 2018, the team that beat them was Real Madrid, who went on to win the Champions League. When they lost at home in 2017, the team that beat them was Real Madrid, that went on to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Derek, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. All the best.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. As epic as that was, it was just one of some pretty darn good. I'd say 3 out of 4 were 5-star games. But let's go to the Etihad, because Manchester City, they beat Borussia Dortmund 2-1. So much hype pregame about Haaland. By the way, we already talked Haaland. I just want to point out the photographers even noticing that when Haaland walked into the team hotel, he had a backpack in Manchester City colors on it. I mean, come on. That is how granular we got. But some people were expecting City to stomp them, but Borussia Dortmund played well.
Yeah, I thought really well. I was there, and I was really impressed, I have to say. I know you were not too keen on Jan Knopf to start up front when he'd never start ever again with the first team. And I know you maybe don't feel that Dortmund played that well, but certainly I thought the way they prepared for it, the game plan that they have to try to nullify Cancelo's influence on the game, coming inside into midfield from his left-back position, worked pretty well because we didn't see him. And actually in the second half, City went back to building up with four players at the back instead of the three that they had, and Cancelo in midfield. He almost didn't take that position in midfield anymore in the second half, and they tried to straight Dortmund because what they did in the first half was not working. So I thought great game plan from Dortmund. He worked to a certain extent, because I think a 1-1 draw would have been great. And then Thomas Meunier made quite a mistake, and Phil Foden, who easily could have scored a hat-trick in the second half, won it for City. But I think it's nicely poised for a good second leg, and certainly Dortmund surprised me.
It is. It makes all the difference. Look, Dortmund, if Dortmund could have easily lost that game 4-1, right?
Because of the
Foden chances and...
But Bellingham should have stood, right?
We'll get into that. I would have let it stand. Yeah, yeah. I thought that was a mistake. But I can also see why it wasn't given. Because you go in straight leg, that's the reality. We don't need to spend too much time on Rodri and Hattigan.
No.
That was frankly embarrassing. But again, that's what VAR is there for, right? That it is 2-1, we have a meaningful second leg, and justice at least was served there.
Yeah.
I think we owe to VAR. So just look, I'm not saying you got to love VAR as much as I do, but please put it in the balance. Yeah. You know, when you go and moan about this. No, I thought Dortmund's midfield was tremendous. Emre Can in the middle of the park is a different player, and he really showed up for this game. I know I've been critical of him in the past, but he was big.
But he lost the ball on the first goal, though. And if you lose a ball like this, with a quick attacking transition from City,
you're playing trouble. Manchester City.
Yeah, but you get punished.
But first of all, City still had a lot to do, which they did because they're good. Daoud, I thought, was tremendous in the middle of the park. Jude Bellingham, you guys had a little bit of a bromance afterwards, didn't you?
I mean, I was amazed by his game anyway. I thought he was fantastic, considering he only turns 18 in June. Just the work rate.
I'm told that the month of June will be renamed Jude in his honor, by the way.
Yeah, June Bellingham, if you want. Or 1st of Jude. He was, and then he did the post-match interview with me for French TV, and he was just so mature,
but so relaxed, everything, all his analysis was perfect, and I was really impressed by him almost as much off the field and on the field. And I just think the future is incredible for him. I don't know how high and far he will go, but certainly he's got everything, clearly the brains and the talent, to be an incredible player.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, because you know we see young players breaking through who are talented, more athletic, more skillful. This guy's also smarter than everybody else. I mean, that's really what sets it apart.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's a tremendous player, he's a good athlete, but he's just so sharp up here. As far as City are concerned, were you surprised by the Bernardo Silva up front move? I know he likes doing it, and obviously Jesus has his issues, whatever. I'm just not sure that this was the game to do it in.
Don't know, Hummels and Akanji, maybe not the most mobile, but certainly not Hummels. Maybe finding hard to know when to pick him up, when not to pick him up, when to stay.
But Bernardo
Silva
is not the most mobile either. That's,
no, I know, but he's so intelligent.
And with no Sterling either, I just thought maybe you're lacking a little bit of directness. Maybe when you put this lineup, when you put the setup out, right,
yeah,
with Foden and Mahrez and Bernardo Silva, you're sending a message: we're going to pass around you and create chances that way, which they did, because the City can be many different ways. You're not sending the message: we're going to exploit the directness on turnovers. I just thought that was an interesting call.
But I think for it to work, they should have had a João Cancelo and Ilkay Gundogan in a much better form than what we saw. Otherwise, the whole idea of a false nine doesn't work. And by the way, those players, especially Gundogan, was much better when Gabriel Jesus came on, and the goal comes from one of the runs by Gundogan to set up Phil Foden. But certainly, Gabriel Jesus, you saw what Gabriel Jesus brought when he came on.
Jules, we're going to get into this some more, but I need to address...
I feel you have to get it out of your chest.
Yes. The man's name is Octavian Sovre.
Yeah.
He is an assistant referee. He was an assistant referee to the referee, Ovidiu Hategan. It's a Romanian officiating crew. And after the game, obviously the match officials and the players all go down the same tunnel, although they have different dressing rooms. This dude stops and waits for Erling Haaland to come by. And he asks Erling Haaland to autograph a yellow and a red card that he had in his pocket. Now, why an assistant referee would have a yellow and red card in his pocket at first seemed like a mystery to me, because surely Mr. Hategan gets those. Maybe he has spares. I don't know. But anyway, he was lambasted and pilloried for doing it. People saying, oh, you know, what a breach of ethics, it's inappropriate, whatever. I want to say this. Yeah, it's not appropriate to do it in a public space like this. However, it does happen, not like the guy's putting it in his personal autograph collection. As we later found out, the guy did it because he's raising money for some autism charity in Romania. It would have been better if maybe he could have approached Borussia Dortmund separately.
Completely.
After the game. Oh. And this happened after the game, I should also point out, right? It's not a good look the way he did it. But man, aren't we going to, people go a little bit over the top?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit. It reminded me of the Angers manager, Stéphane Moulin, who during the PSG Angers game asked Neymar for his shirt for his son for after the game, and he got blasted. He got absolutely battered in France for doing that.
He asked him before the game.
No, during the game. So you can hear him with the microphone during the game.
Okay, but when Neymar.
So that was stupid, and he should have done it in a private way. But I agree with you. I thought it went a bit too far with the ref there.
So there's a moralizing
completely
on this. I mean, I don't, like I said, it's not appropriate. Yeah. But man, there's many more serious issues.
Definitely.
In the world. Just wanted to get that out of the way.
What did you make of obviously Erling Haaland? Was, you know, everybody was just watching him going to the Etihad with all the stories about the transfer, his dad, everything, and just the occasion as well. You know, that was his first quarterfinal of the Champions League in his young career. He'd been on fire so far. Hadn't scored in four games prior to this one. How did you find him?
It was interesting because I thought, and I think in some ways this is a bit one of the untold stories of the game, because I thought City dealt with him very, very well.
Yeah.
You're not going to, you know, as the old thing is, you know, you're not going to stop him, but you can contain him. And I thought they contained him. You know, there's going to be times when he pops up, and I think there were two. Obviously, the way They combined to set up the goal from Bellingham to that ball around the corner.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is what makes Haaland great. He's not just a great finisher, great athlete. His vision and his passing, I don't know if he's the best passing center forward in the world, because he might have competition from Firmino, from Lukaku, from what we've seen this season, but he's certainly up there.
Yeah.
And he had a couple other situations where he popped up, but he wasn't a constant menace. And I think that's a credit to the job that City did to him defensively. It looked like he was in that box between the two central defenders and Rodri all the time, and it was difficult for him to get out of it.
Mm. He did though once when that Dahoud threw ball where he, Diaz ends up on the floor and it's almost one-on-one with
when he road grades Diaz. Yeah, completely. And you're reminded of what he can do.
Yeah.
But again, this happened.
Then he should score that chance, right?
He should have put it away. You expect him to put it away. But I mean, I still look at it, the guy's 20 years old. And, it's really difficult to play against those two. And really difficult also. I mean, we talked about this off air with Derek, and I go back to this. I have an issue with Borussia Dortmund and the decision to start a guy like Knauf in a game like this.
Because I understand.
Like, maybe he'll go on to have a tremendous career. He played 47 minutes of first team football before that game. You've got Gio Reyna, you've got Julian Brandt, you've got Hazard on the bench. Three guys who have had their ups and downs, but they're three people you've invested heavily in. What message are you sending? You're sending the message, we're so clever, we're so smart, that, look, we'll play this guy because they won't be prepared for him. I mean, he ran around, he did what he could, but why?
Before the match, I was pitch side to do my stuff for French TV.
And you're like, who is this guy?
No, well, I knew his face, but I saw the Dortmund players coming and, you look at the pitch and you look at the stadium and you're there. And Haaland didn't come out, stayed in the dressing room, which I thought, okay, this is interesting. Pretty much everybody else, or certainly a big group of them, came out to look at the pitch. And Knauf was there. And I promise you, he had eyes so big, almost like, wow, even without fans, wow, this is... And I did think, because he was with Bellingham, he was with Hummels, he was with a lot of the starters... I was like, okay, maybe it was something that, what a gamble that would be. I think I agree with you. And just on Haaland, I was stood behind one of the goals. And I mean, he's scary when he runs. He's so powerful. And because I was at the same level, and not usually we are in the stand, but because I was at the same level as them and so close, and I could see it running to me. And when you watch a movie on 3D or something with the glasses and you feel, I feel like he was coming at me. I was like, wow. And I can just imagine if you're a center back and if you're maybe not as strong as Ruben Dias, if you're Jules Koundé, and how amazing Jules Koundé has been this season, but certainly not the same shape and size as Haaland. And you see him running at you like, wow, okay.
You know who had that same thing.
It was really impressive.
After the goal, if you watch, he sets up Marco Reus. Marco Reus runs. First of all, he celebrates as if he scored the goal, He's so happy, and he runs over to Reus, and he starts shaking him. And I'm like, dude, that's your captain and club legend. Don't break him. It's phenomenal. With City, obviously they're favorites to win the Champions League. We praised them to high heaven. But we talked about the Bernardo Silva choice. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, is there a Sterling issue going on here? Because I thought, he had a difficult start to the season. Then he started playing well again. Yeah. And again, I go back to this. I thought this was the game for him.
Yeah. I mean, I was a bit surprised when I saw the team sheets. And then they were warming up again where the side I was. And he was happy. It was not, how you could sometimes... be sulky, and especially on a big game like this. And he was scoring goals against the fourth goalkeeper on some Benjamin Mendy's crosses or whatever. And he was happy. And then he warmed up for a long time. And then he went and sat down and never got up again. I don't know. I thought Foden... I can see where Mahrez starts, because I think Pep likes how different Mahrez is to a usual Pep player. And he set up the first goal. Foden, I think...
He didn't play badly, Mahrez.
No,
and Foden.
And Foden has to start. He's so good, and he could have had a hat-trick, and he scored the winning goal. So, in a way, Pep's choices have been vindicated. He's been vindicated for his choices to not start Sterling and not even bringing him on, I guess. But you're right. Maybe there's something.
I just would have thought, and obviously Jesus brought a bit of that directness afterwards. I don't think Bernardo Silva had a good game at all. But it, I don't know. Who are we to question the Pep? But I will question him on this point, because yeah. before the game, and this is, it was weird actually. He said this on Saturday, I think, after the Leicester game.
Yeah.
But for some reason, the quotes only got out there and made waves, more so outside of England, I think, when he said FIFA and UEFA are killing the players. We're playing too many games. The season started later and is going to finish earlier. Blah blah blah. I think these are things he said before. I think these are valid points. But Dennis also points out, you don't take up your full complement of substitutes. He only made one substitution in that game. Do you get that?
No. And certainly if the game finished 1-1 and Fernandinho has been warming up for 25 minutes and you never thought, okay, let's we can't score the second goal. We're 1-0 up with 15 minutes to go or whatever. Let's not jeopardize our chances by letting them score a goal, for example, and you bring Fernandinho on. And I really didn't understand. And I'm sure we talked it on the show before in the Premier League, where he's been moaning about the five subs and this and that. In a lot of the big games, certainly, he doesn't even make the three changes.
It's a curious look. Again, there are people who know more about this in terms of load management. Does it just relate to minutes?
Course.
Does it relate to preparing for the game?
And the GPS that the players have on and all
exactly,
of that,
all this stuff. But it is a bit of curious, almost apparent contradiction.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Pep. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid beat Liverpool 3-1 at Valdebebas, a place Klopp clearly doesn't like. Jules, your thoughts?
I thought Klopp should have spent more time explaining how you can let Toni Kroos with so much time on the ball. I mean, he was in his sofa watching Netflix, and then you let him pass the ball right and left and top corner, wherever you want.
And the little hand gesture before the call.
Exactly, which was incredible.
Casey at the bat, man. Called home run.
Talk to me about tactics. Talk to me why you didn't press him more, why there was not enough pressure on Modric on the third goal, on that mistake from Alexander-Arnold for
especially
the second goal.
Especially when you're a pressing team.
Exactly.
That's what you do.
What happened? More than, it's a training ground stadium. It's not a real stadium. We know it was disturbing to us. Why are you trying to find those excuses? Yeah. Please.
It's kind of un-Klopp-like to
but he's been at it all season. VAR, the referee, the schedule, UEFA, Southgate, the five subs. Every time there's something. And now the training ground? I mean, come on.
I think I take your point on that. I think it also puts into context what Arsenal are right now. Given the weekend. I don't want to take too much away from Real Madrid, though, because I thought they played really, really,
really well.
Liverpool certainly had their flaws. The Vinicius thing, you're happy for Vinicius because finally it comes together.
He had a tough season. Yeah.
You wonder if it's going to be consistent, but obviously you can see what a weapon he can be if he ever masters that. Phillips, I don't know, and Alexander-Arnold, that was rough. The Naby Keita thing was a big call, I thought, from Klopp.
It was a big gamble that didn't pay off.
And again, you have to assume that he sees Keita every day in training. We don't.
Yeah.
But still.
And I understand, you know, Keita with the intensity, the runs, the press, etc. Except that it was clearly a medium block. And clearly Klopp didn't ask the players to press as high as they did against Arsenal on Saturday or what they usually do. Otherwise, you don't drop like they did and you don't let Kroos have so much time on the ball, right?
No.
They were not tired. They were not tired after half an hour when the first goal was scored and Kroos had 5 hours to pick a pass for Vinicius.
I mean, we'll be getting into this more, no doubt, on Monday post-Clásico.
Yeah.
But I am struck by the fact that all season long, Real Madrid's been kind of kept together by five outstanding players, right? The three midfielders, Courtois and Benzema. If the supporting cast starts producing, if Sergio Ramos, at some point he's going to come back, like he came back and went out again.
And Varane as well after the
and
COVID
Varane
test.
All of a sudden, you have a team that can win the Champions League again, right?
Yeah, for sure.
No question about it.
No question.
Chelsea win away at Porto, against Porto in Sevilla, 2-0. Gab, this was the right response after the humiliation against West Brom on Saturday.
Yeah, this was more like the Chelsea that we saw before, the one that didn't concede goals and whatever. They conceded initiative to Porto, who I thought did what they could. But without Sergio Oliveira, it's obviously going to be a very different Porto side. But, you know, Mason Mount's goal, that was the first goal. The first shot on goal, that was after half an hour. The front two, we saw the whole like roulette wheel spinning again.
Disaster.
Werner and Havertz again. It doesn't work. By the way, just because you play Havertz at center forward doesn't mean he's automatically a false nine. He can either play as a false nine, he can play as a striker. I don't know. He can play as anything because he never got the ball. Werner has obviously got issues. I don't think he can play his way out of it. But you know, 2-0, really good result. Yeah. They got one put in the semifinal, I think, at this stage.
Yeah.
Inter beat Sassuolo 2-1 in what was their game in hand. They're now 11 points clear with 9 games to go. Jules, we can crown them now, right?
I think so, Gab. 10 wins in a row, and it was not just the win. It's the way it happened. Quality goals. Lukaku scoring, then assisting Lautaro Martinez. That front two, as we've been saying all season, pretty good. They were solid, even if Sassuolo played well and had some good moments early in that game and scored a goal. But I just thought there was something about this Inter team.
They're just seeing it out at this point. They're scoring and defending the
league,
which is fine.
And the confidence is so high and the momentum that they're almost untouchable, I think. Cristiano Ronaldo scores at Juventus beat Napoli 2-1 in a huge game and what was basically a Champions League playoff. Gab, this was a great game. Why can't they play like this all the time? And Dybala as well.
Dybala scored a great goal. Federico Chiesa with the assist. He was man of the match. Look, they switched to a de facto 4-4-2. By the way, Pirlo, credit to him because McKennie, Arthur, and Dybala, the COVID protocol violation trio, they came on. They were part of the squad, but they didn't start the game. So it's good that I think you're having somebody who's kind of sticking to his principles. Look, when you play with intensity, good things happen. This was an open game. Napoli, I thought, played relatively well as well. Hopefully, it's the kind of thing that boosts your confidence going forward. That they understand that, you know, it's fun to put attacking players on the pitch, but to get away with it, you need to have intensity. City are a team that do that. Juventus hope to be that one day.
Gigi Buffon started in goal because Chesney hasn't been really that good. He made mistakes against Torino. Do you think Buffon will stay? Or
I don't think so, no. I think it was a one-off rocket.
I would love to.
Up the Chesney bottom.
I would love to.
Barcelona beat Valladolid Monday night to pull within a single point of Atletico Madrid, and they're two ahead of Real with the Classic on Saturday. Jules, who looks better going into the game?
Ooh, I think it's hard. I think Barca is 14 wins, one draw in the last 15. Real Madrid is 10 wins and 2 draws in the last 12. So both really good, both with momentum. I guess Barca didn't play in midweek like Real Madrid did against Liverpool, and maybe in terms of freshness and fitness, that could be something good. I don't know, but it would be a hell of a game, that's for sure. Meanwhile, a serious blow for Atletico Madrid as Luis Suarez suffers a muscular injury, and he will be out probably for a couple of weeks. Gab, will that cost them the title? Could that cost them the title?
Oh, no. What's going to cost them the title is the stupid points they've dropped along the way and the way they've been playing poorly. Obviously, this doesn't help. It's up to your man Musa now.
Yeah.
I would hope so. Unleash him. In some ways, perhaps more suited to playing a more conservative style, if that's what El Cholo wants to do.
Yeah.
Kevin De Bruyne has extended his contract with Manchester City. Jules, he's gotten a modest raise and a 2-year deal through 2025, which is what? Kind of what we advised.
Exactly.
When we had Nader Munua, right? We sat together as a consultant, so we said, perfect solution.
Thank you, Manchester City, for listening to us. Clearly, Chiqui Begarishtein and Ferran Soriano and Pep Guardiola, you did the right thing. Well done, and well done, Kevin De Bruyne.
And because I never pass up an opportunity, by the time his contract ends, he will be roughly the same age, just a tiny bit older than Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who makes almost the same amount of money, was when his contract started.
Yeah. Juan Cala has responded to allegation that he racially abused Mukhtar Diakabi at the weekend in the Cadiz-Valencia game, but doubling down, one, he did denies it, and two, he says he would take legal action against anyone who defames him. Gab, this is getting ugly now.
This is very ugly. Look, it's hard to tell because we weren't there, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to come out and you're going to say, oh, well, he's either making it up or he misunderstood, I mean, you can't, and I'll sue anybody who keeps calling me a racist or whatever. He also said, There's no racism in Spanish football, which is never a good idea to say because every team has five or six black players.
Yeah.
He's getting terribly advised here. I don't know where it's going to go. The La Liga took an La Liga's immediately opened an investigation. Yeah. You know, Valencia doubling down as well from their end, saying like he's a liar. I don't want to see people using this to their own advantage, one way or the other. I just want Yacabi to get justice, and nobody should ever feel that they've been racially abused by an opponent or by the fans on the pitch. This is an opportunity to make a stand, but I think that was missed when they didn't halt the game, because. Yeah.
You're right.
It's going to be really difficult to prove it. You're going to have to balance the probabilities. It could be Luis Suarez, Patrice Evra all over. It's horrible.
Yeah.
West Ham beat Wolves on Monday night, and Jules, they're fourth in the table. Do we need to give them more love?
Yeah, we come on. It's not my cup of tea the way they play.
Four Manager of the Year awards. Yeah, he's on his way to the fourth.
I know, and Jesse Lingard, the revival is spectacular. Let's see where they finish at the end of the season. eight players who were part of the Italian squad during the international break, the one that just gone in March, including my boy Marco Verratti, have tested positive for COVID. The cluster, including the coaching staff, is up to 19 people now. Gab, how concerning is it? And we're talking also Bonucci, Grifo, Pessina.
Bernardeschi. So, and eight members of the coaching staff, including some of Mancini's important assistants. Around 80 people were part of the expedition, and 19 have tested positive now, despite the fact that while they were there, they were being tested every day. That's one of the issues when you form a bubble during a competition. If the virus is in there, it's going to keep moving around. That is a concern. They're going to evaluate this. I don't know what it means for the Euros. I think it means that, hopefully the overall situation will be better by the time it rolls around. But I think the main message is you have to stay super, super vigilant, and you've got very, very little margin for error.
That's true.
Ajax midfielder Ryan Gravenberch has been linked to Chelsea, Liverpool, and a host of other clubs. Jules, you don't need me to tell you who his agent is, right?
No, and Mino Raiola, right now when he's watching Ryan Gravenberch, he's like this with his hand. Oh, yes, because he's going to be an incredible talent. He's 19. I don't have the words to describe how good he's been this season for his first real season with the first team.
You know how some people feel compelled, any kind of young player comes up, they say, he's the new so-and-so. I've heard people refer to him as the new Pogba, I guess because he's tall and represented by Mino Raiola, or are there more?
No, because he's also very good technically. I don't think many players, and we talked about Jude Bellingham before, who again, he's quite tall and strong, but so good technically on the ball. And
this dude's bigger though.
Yeah, he's even bigger than Bellingham, but I don't think too much. But yeah, like, I can see the similarities with Pogba in the way they play. And again, that the sort of blend between the physical strength and the technical ability, which I think sets them apart, because usually in midfield, you're either one or the other, but they are both. And I just think the future is incredible for him.
I just want to stay for the record, Paul, since I know you're another regular viewer.
Of course,
viewer,
and so is me.
He's not saying that he is as technically gifted as you, because if he were, I'd get very upset, because Paul Pogba is on another level from Ryan Gravenberch, from what I've seen of Ryan
Gravenberch. Paul knows how much I love him anyway, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says that the competition between his two goalkeepers, Dean Henderson and David De Gea, is healthy. You're not buying this, are you?
Look, there's some things a manager has to say, right? Because there's no other. He inherited the situation. It wasn't Ole Gunnar Solskjaer who said, oh, look, at a time when David De Gea's contract is winding down, let's go and give him a deal that makes him one of the top two or three highest paid keepers in the world, even though there's nobody else lining up to buy him. Nobody else wants him. Let's just do this for the hell of it, even though we have Dean Henderson there, right? He inherited this situation.
Yeah.
So when you start phasing out your starting goalkeeper, and you start doing it by alternating them, and you say stuff like competition is healthy. It's not healthy to rotate goalkeepers. It's not good. He has no choice.
Yeah.
He has no choice but to do that. Every manager in the world will tell you that I want an established number one and a solid number two.
So that's his way of getting to Henderson number one and whoever number two. If De Gea stays, he is. If he wants to leave, he can leave.
I suspect
that's what you mean.
So. Yeah, maybe David De Gea can stay and play cards with Kepa. I don't know. But this isn't I just want to be clear. I want to defend Solskjaer here and say this isn't Solskjaer saying, oh, look, I've discovered this new brilliant thing. Let's have two high-priced goalkeepers competing. Because, no, that's not a good idea. Yeah. It's never a good idea.
I agree.
Sometimes it's a necessity. Kieran Tierney is injured again. Jules, I guess we'll see more of Cedric now.
I think so, unless Bukayo Saka goes back to left-back where he played at some point before. I don't think that's the idea. So Cedric, a left-back, although he's right-footed, but I think he can play there. It's a blow for Arsenal because Tierney had been so good. At least he won't need surgery on his knees.
Now, are all these injuries this guy has, are these all related to each other?
No. I told you on Monday, one was shoulder, this one is knee, and you saw the contact and the moment it happened. It's
very
nothing
unlucky
to do with him. Yeah, it was very unlucky.
And this is all unrelated to the one he had when he first came to Arsenal and he played like two games. We played, oh, he's amazing, and then he gets hurt and disappears. Yeah, they're all unrelated.
Yeah.
Okay.
You happy now?
All right.
Okay. Arsene Wenger has announced that FIFA have been working with automated offside technology and that we could see robo linesmen as early as the World Cup in Qatar at the end of 2022. Gav, what's my boy talking about? Surely not. What? Those, like a real robot?
Yeah. They're going to be androids affected because they're going to have humanoid shapes and they're going to run on tracks. By the sidelines, going up and down. And
it was upwards
full. Going to go
upwards full from Arsene.
No, he's not talking about. It says robo linesman. It should actually say robo offsides call. But the idea is there's some technology out there, which I got to say, I'm hugely skeptical about.
Yeah, me too.
Which somehow measures the limbs, the ball, the positioning of different people in real time. I think it's a company called Chiron who say that they've got this. FIFA have trialed it secretly, supposedly, at the FIFA Club World Cup.
Really?
And yeah, and the idea is that these will be used to tell you if a player is offside. Now, the linesman will still be the one determining, is he interfering with play? Is it active? Is it passive? All that other stuff. I don't know. Like, it would seem to me that, you know, the World Cup in Qatar is, what, 18 months away?
Yeah.
I think it's too soon. I think you need to have a big, long trial to trial the tech, just make sure that players can't somehow game this. Hey, if it works, great, but
not sure I'm ready for this, Gav, I have to say.
But there is a point here to be made, right? It's funny because we both live in England. And yeah, in England, people freak out like, oh, look, he was offsides by half a centimeter. Oh, why are you going to get it go? Blah, 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 right? And then how do we know the tech is right when it's half a centimeter and they're drawing lines on the map? Fair enough. But then when Hawkeye tells them, oh, it was a goal, they're like, oh, yes. Oh, the Oracle, Hawkeye says so. It's got to be true. Let's. What the hell is Hawkeye? It's a bunch of freaking cameras measuring exactly what the VAR offsides do, right? And by the way, Hawkeye, as Sheffield, was it Sheffield United, right? We'll tell you.
Yeah,
sometimes it doesn't work because there's too many players around. You know, so this is patent nonsense. The tech has to prove itself. We have faith in Hawkeye. We don't have faith in the visual lines on the pitch. Fine. I think it's going to take a long time for people to have faith in Wenger's robo-machines. Jules, you have very particular thoughts on people who are right-handed and left-footed and vice versa.
I'm fascinated, Gab. I'm really fascinated because I saw a photo of Kevin De Bruyne signing his new contract with his left hand, which I knew he was left-handed. And I thought, let's put the debate out there. So Kevin De Bruyne is left-handed but right-footed. Kylian Mbappe is left-handed and right-footed. But Messi is right-handed and left-footed. So is Antoine Griezmann. So is Diego Maradona. So, like, how? Why? Like, what happened when they were kids? I mean, Rafael Nadal is even worse. He plays tennis with his left hand. Okay? And so you would think, okay, this is his strong hand. But yet, he writes with his right hand. I'm like, what?
And when he plays football, he's right-footed.
Yeah.
I just made that up. I don't know.
I think
if you're some kind of whatever
alien,
scientific...
X-Men.
No, I was going to suggest, why don't we educate ourselves? If you're some kind of scientific medical person who can explain this, please do get in touch.
In the past week, Eric Dyer has told us that he loves to play Lego. He even has, apparently, a Range Rover made of Lego. I don't know how big, but, you know. And that when he dies, he wants his ashes scattered at White Hart Lane. I mean,
I don't know what to say about this guy. I don't get him. It's just an odd thing to say when I think, you know, he hasn't played much of late. The Lego thing, look, much respect. Different strokes for different folks, right?
Exactly.
I do wonder, is it a life-size Lego? And also, did he purposely mention the automobile brand because they also happen to sponsor him?
Oh.
Who knows? I do know. Or maybe he's angling for a Lego sponsorship.
Can he leverage his vast popularity. Can he go to Lego Masters on TV?
Lego Masters. God. Perfect. Then that's where we're going to see him next. Right. That brings us to an end this week. Jules, Classico this weekend?
Yeah.
You're going to be back, aren't you?
Yeah, on Monday. And you're taking your well-deserved day off on Monday.
It'll be well-deserved because also that's a day that barbershops are reopening in this country. And I need a haircut, so I'll be doing my hair. But you'll be in good company with Sid Lowe and Mark Ogden, exactly. Hopefully. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.